Welcome to All Things Marine, Hawaii's thought-provoking show dedicated to marine science and ocean conservation. All Things Marine, brought to you by Kosi Island Earth and the University of Hawaii, Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology. And now, here's your host, the marine science gal, Carly Weiner.
I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal, and today we're going to be discussing two important initiatives happening this summer that are related to coral reef conservation. The first is the 13th International Coral Reef Symposium happening this week in Honolulu, bringing the brightest minds in coral reef science and management together. The second is the proposal to expand the Papahana Mokuakea Marine National Monument, which I have to say is a cause near and dear to my heart. So without further ado, let's dive right in. First up is Dr. Bob Richmond, Director of the Kualoa Marine Laboratory and Research Professor at the University of Hawaii, Manoa. Dr. Richmond has served as a Pew Fellow in Marine Conservation, past President of International Society of Reef Studies, and a Leopold Fellow in Environmental Leadership. Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Carly. It's great to be here.
So let's talk about ICRS, or the International Coral Reef Symposium. It's an exciting week for Hawaii. What is this conference and why is it such a big deal for us?
Okay, so we're lucky number 13. This is the 13th International Coral Reef Symposium. It's the largest meeting of coral scientists and now managers, policymakers, and stakeholders. At our meeting, we're expecting close to 2,500 individuals from 97 nations converging on the Hawaii Convention Center to share their knowledge, and most especially this time, to start looking more carefully at solutions to what we see the daunting problems. It's held every 4 years. This is the first time it'll be in Hawaii in its 47-year history, and likely the last time because there are 97 nations involved, and it's only the third time in the United States. So we're very grateful that we were able to bring it here, and one of the reasons I did it was not because I needed something to do in my spare time, but it's also a great opportunity for Hawaii, number one, to showcase the incredible expertise and activities going on here at the community level, with state managers, with the university, and with a number of partners here, the stakeholders. But it's also an opportunity maybe for a wake-up call that Hawaii has a full range of reefs, from those that are in fantastic shape to those that are pretty well gone. And so it's an opportunity to engage the community of stakeholders from the Keiki to Kupuna to be able to have a look at where we are and where we really need to be.
Well, I think what's so important too that doesn't get advertised that often is the side meetings that happen at these large conferences. So it's, you know, it's not just about the presentations and meeting of the minds, but it's also about being able to connect with people from all over and learning about what they're dealing with in their reef systems versus what we're dealing with here. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the topics you anticipate that will be discussed at the meeting?
Absolutely. And again, you hit it right on the head. This is a different meeting than in the past. My first coral reef symposium was 1977. It was the third. And there were about 300 people. We could all fit into one bar. And there were only two flavors of people there. You were either a biologist or geologist. That's all there was. So it was basically nerds and geeks talking to geeks and nerds, and that's all it was. Over the years, it's really expanded to include not just science, but management. And it was pretty well understood now that science and management are very much entwined. We have great managers who are trained scientists. We have great scientists doing management. Kind of the unexplored frontier that we're trying to do now is to really bridge the science to policy piece. Science to management, as I've said, has gone really well. Science to policy has not. And a lot of it is through better communication, including with the stakeholders. So the side meetings that you identified, we have over 45. The scientific sessions, we started with 190 proposals, which we had to winnow down to about 8 to about by 50% to down to about 80. Same thing, we had a call for side meetings, ancillary meetings, and workshops, and we're up to 45, and that's actually where some of the real exciting stuff is going on. These are meetings that are often open to broader communities, and we also have three sessions open on the evenings, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We'll talk about maybe a little bit later. But of the 45 ancillary meetings, we have everything from community-based management. You know, we've just seen some great opportunities in Hawaii with the recent announcement for the Big Island, and a lot of local control and stewardship that's going on. We have one on personal care products, which has garnered a lot of attention. Everything from the impacts of sunscreens to the shampoos and other chemicals that we use and never think twice. People have this feeling that drains, toilets, and sinks are magical. Things go down and they disappear, and they don't. They end up in our coastal areas, and all of these chemicals, including those that we call EDCs, endocrine disrupting compounds, can really wreak havoc with natural cycles of reproduction in corals and fish, not to mention have effects on people as well. We have those on communication, those on education. We have educators from around the world coming together to learn how we can do a better job of not only messaging, but be able to get that message to stakeholders in a culturally appropriate manner. We're thrilled that thanks to a grant from the Castle Foundation, we have a lot of local, and when I say local, I mean in the broadest sense, we have a number of kupuna that are going to be here. We have Uncle Saul from Lanai. We have Maka'ala from Kauai. We have Uncle Mac from Molokai that are going to be not only participating but presenting as recognized experts in their field, and we're hoping for a lot of peer-to-peer. So we have everything from education to the most hardcore genetic science to how do we make science more relevant.
It's amazing. I think it's going to be such an important conference and so many amazing topics that you'll be discussing. I mean, from what you just said, there's a full range there from shampoo to local management. What do you think is going to be the most impactful to Hawaii coming from this meeting? What do you think there is to learn from some of these other countries that are also doing a lot of reef research and dealing with coral bleaching that has happened in the last couple of years?
I think there's two levels. One is at the leadership level. We're actually putting together a leader summit as part of this meeting, and our keynote speaker is the president of Palau, His Excellency Tommy Rumengasau. He's a bit of a hero to all of us in the field of marine conservation and coral reefs in particular. They just set aside 80% of their EEZ as full protection. And for a country that size to make such a bold move is absolutely spectacular. They've taken on the understanding that a shark in the ocean is worth far more than a shark fin in a bowl of soup. And he's leading by example. That here you have a nation. I began working there in 1986. I've known President Rumengasau since he was Vice President Rumengasau. And he's a spectacular leader. And by having him come to the table, his task is a daunting one, is to be able to help lay the foundation for the science to policy bridge by reaching out to the scientific community. And that's why we put him in the keynote position, is to really put a challenge down that if the scientific community really wants their data to be relevant and all their hard work and all the great things that we do as scientists to be of value, they really need to be able to do a better job of blending that over to the policy issues that they have to deal with. When he gets up in the morning, he's got to deal with economic issues, cultural issues, infrastructure. And what we're trying to do is tie together, if these are the things keeping him awake at night, you know, there are things that tie directly to coral reefs. It generates millions of dollars. One dive site alone, the Blue Corner in Palau, generates close to $4 million a year in revenue just from dives alone in a non-destructive manner. We have one fish there, one humphead wrasse, that in the old days of Kodachrome, when people bought digital, that fish was worth $17,000 a year in film. Nothing else. And so you put it together and people realize, and that's the challenge from the Leader Summit, to be able to put that together. So we're very excited to have leaders coming to speak, and a lot of it is peer-to-peer. And for Hawaii and William Isla, who's here as well, being able to exchange fishers and the stakeholders that use the reefs here in Hawaii with the people coming up from Palau. There's quite a delegation coming up, and in the past they've had some exchanges, and those have been incredibly valuable. It's not scientists lecturing to people, but it's peer-to-peer. You know, why is it that you have fish and we don't? Or what did you used to look like and where we are today? And sharing that peer-to-peer experience among stakeholders, they're the ones that can really help drive the policy engine through the electoral process. So it's a full range of people. Again, as I said, leaders, stakeholders, scientists, managers, educators coming together with the sole purpose of finding out how do we do a better job of making the science relevant and going from knowledge to action.
Absolutely. And we'll be talking later a lot about the Papahana Mokuakea Marine National Monument. How will that play into this conference? Will there be sessions or topics that will be addressing monument expansion and the coral reefs of the monument?
Absolutely. And we're very thrilled to be able to have a very special session Friday afternoon, which will be a celebration. This is the 10-year anniversary. And we'll be putting on a special session that will include, once again, scientists, cultural practitioners, people who have experienced what it's like to be up there to give the different perspective. One of the key people, Keiko Iwa, has talked about biocultural resources. And that's what's pretty exciting for a lot of us, is this is one of those cases where there's true harmony between traditional ecological knowledge, the cultural resources and what we have for the best of modern genetics and current patterns, they're all coming to the exact same conclusion. This is an incredible opportunity to make a bold step forward for Hawaii, for the Pacific, for the world, in setting aside an area that's really a huge bank account that can generate the principle for sustainability for generations to come. So Friday afternoon, we'll have that. There also is going to be a photo exhibit. And throughout the course of the meeting, there'll be opportunities for people to engage and talk to one another about the options, the opportunities, and the value of this really bold and important effort.
That's excellent. And how many people are you expecting at the conference?
As of yesterday morning at 5 a.m., which is when my day starts, we were up to 2,289 presentations. We're looking with other people that are going to be coming from the community. I'm pretty sure we'll go over 2,400, and we may even go a little bit higher than that. As I mentioned, 97 nations. We have, again, a very broad level of expertise, so it'll be the largest international coral reef symposium ever.
Wow. And so we're not just talking about a few scientists in a room, you know, chatting with each other. We're really expanding here. And you mentioned earlier about some of the public events and that there's opportunity for the public to engage at the conference. Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, we really wanted to make this as relevant and as valuable to the homestay as possible. So first and foremost, we really wanted to make this accessible to the community. So Monday night, there's going to be an evening session at the Ala Moana Hotel, and I believe you're involved in that one.
I am.
And it's really important. It's a great opportunity to showcase a lot of interactions, a lot of community work, a lot of conservation efforts. Then Tuesday night and Wednesday night are going to be at the convention center, and they'll be open as well. Tuesday night, we're going to have some speakers to talk about their work. And again, it's a balance. We have an internationally renowned scientist, Peter Sale, who actually has a lot of his early experience here in Hawaii and is world-renowned, works with the United Nations on large policy. And we also have some local kupuna that are going to be talking about their cultural connection with resources and their responsibility at the intergenerational level. So it'll be a real mixture, and we're hoping for a broad audience, that we're hoping we get everything from middle school students up to grandparents to come, because that's exactly what we're looking for. Wednesday evening will be a celebration. You know, for the scientist, it's hard. We're looking at data every day about climate change, about runoff sedimentation. All you have to do is look around Hawaii after a rainstorm. You can see these brown water plumes extending out further than ever before. So we're not here to sugarcoat it, but by the same token, we're not here to do the final funeral dirge for coral reefs either. We really look at this as a meeting of hope and optimism. And so for Wednesday night, we're going to have it as a celebration of corals. We actually have a internationally renowned musician coming from Sweden, of all places. They have an NGO for coral reefs, and he's working with local musicians, and they put together a new arrangement called Kumulipo Dreams, which is basically based on the Kumulipo chant. And I'll leave it to William here, as the one who's most appropriate to speak to the cultural history of the Hawaii creation chant. But this is an interesting and beautiful piece of music with Native Hawaiian musicians, as well as this internationally renowned individual. We have an a cappella group of coral scientists that are going to have a unique thing. I can't wait to see that, because I know some of these people. And we will have local Hawaiian musicians too. We're trying to engage both art and culture and music, because that's a great way of communicating. It's not just math and symbols and equations. Yeah. And we're really excited about making this a celebration of hope, that if the community, if all of us can come together, and in our logo, the Native Hawaiian artist who put it together, Glenn Freitas, really captured that in the petroglyph rendition of community members, of people with knowledge, of people who are stakeholders and fishers, of navigators, of teachers, of kupuna, of children, all of us working together for the central theme of the sustainability of coral reefs as a legacy for the future.
Amazing. There is so much there that is available to people. Where can they learn more or find out about the timing and details of where all this will be held?
So we're doing a number of media blitz things with both the cable, with radio, and with printed. We have a number of articles that will be coming out, but there's also the opportunity just to go to our website. The easiest way to do that is to just Google 13 ICRS. No, we're the lucky 13. That's ICRS, International Coral Reef Symposium. And if you link that, we actually have an app that you can do on an iPad, an iPhone, or a Android. So for all the kids out there with electronic devices, you can reach the app through the website, and you can see everything that's going on, including the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday evening events. Most of them kick off around 6:30. Monday night, again, will be at the Ala Moana Hotel, Tuesday and Wednesday at the Convention Center, and we'll have media blast all over the place.
And if the public or the students are interested in attending the whole meeting and want to hear all the speakers at the conference, can they still register?
Yep. And again, that can be done through the website. So we do have special rates for local and for students to be involved. And if people go to the website, they can also get the other contact information. So that's, again, kind of one-stop shopping. But yeah, we'll take registrations right up to the closing.
Excellent. And, you know, you're doing all this work organizing the meeting, but you're not just a meeting organizer. You're doing a lot of work yourself and research and have a deep connection to the coral reefs. How will this conference impact your work personally?
Personally, at the personal level, it means that I haven't slept a full night for the last 6 months. I had a full head of hair when I started, and look at me now. But no, it's obviously a labor of love, that it's something that, you know, I started out as a purely academic researcher who was interested in cool questions and cool things. And I learned very quickly that these cool things, I started working on reefs 42 years ago. 1974 was my first experience in the Caribbean in an area that William and I went to not too long ago in the Virgin Islands. I had a chance to revisit my sites that I started on 42 years ago, and they were devastated. They went from 80% coral cover to less than 2% in some areas. Wow. Instead of schools of fish, I saw one snapper, and everybody was excited that I actually saw a snapper, and it was about 5 inches long. I'll be honest, I went back to the hotel room and cried. I just couldn't believe that in my lifetime, in my experience, to see such devastation. And again, it's not out there to bum people out or to be depressed, but rather to look at, we can do so much better. We have the knowledge, and that's why, again, it's a passion for me, not only being on the front line of research with my talented graduate students, some of which are Native Hawaiian and have been involved with Papanamo Kuakea, but also being able to look at the blessing of being at a university, being surrounded by energy and enthusiasm and optimism with all this young talent coming up. And that's a big focus of this meeting, too, is to really help this next generation of scientists, many of whom are culturally connected, to make this quantum leap and to get beyond the documentation of the loss of reefs and start to get to the intervention. So it's like human health. You know, if I go to my doctor and I get a diagnosis that I have liver disease or diabetes or cancer, it's one thing to say, oh, isn't that a shame? You know, I think I'll just go somewhere and disappear. Or I'm going to do something about it. We're going to go for the treatment. We're going to go for the intervention. And as I tell people, that personally, I'm an optimist. Otherwise, I can't get out of bed in the morning. And professionally, I'm a pragmatist. So it's the optimist in me that wanted to get the meeting to Hawaii. And it's the pragmatist in me that says, the communities really need to pull together. But I believe we can. And my view is one of hope and optimism, that meetings like this, we're hoping this is not just a one-off. The last day will be the Papanamo Kuakea, which I think is a great opportunity for hope. It'll also be a day of 2 hours of synthesis, not to just have the last talk and the last beer and go home, but to really set the stage for what are we going to do in the next 4 years before the next symposium. So my research, I actually get to give a talk. And most of my students will be giving talks. But my major job is to make sure that I'm providing a framework that other people can shine. And my job is to do so from the back instead of the front.
Well, I couldn't put it better myself. So I think that's a good place to take a pause. We'll take a quick break. Thank you very much, Dr. Richmond, for coming and speaking with us today. And when we come back, we'll be talking about expanding the Papahana Mokuakea Marine National Monument.
Quarterback looking, firing across the middle. Wow, what a grab in traffic. Larson really had defenders hanging all over, but somehow he comes up with the football.
On the football field, you've got to stay focused and not get distracted.
NFL Hall of Famer and President and CEO of CTIA, the Wireless Association, Steve Largent.
The same is true on the road. So before your wireless phone becomes a distraction, take a timeout for safety. Place your phone in easy reach before you leave. Never take notes or look up a phone number while you're driving. In bad weather or traffic, call later. Dial sensibly and use a hands-free device. You know, your wireless phone can be your best safety tool to call for help, stop a crime, or help someone in need. However you use it, remember, with wireless, safety is your call.
The wireless industry reminds you to drive safely. For more information, visit www.wirelesssafety.org.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, your Marine Science Gal. With us now is David Swatland, who has acted as the Deputy Superintendent for the Policy and Programs at the Papahana Mokuakea Marine National Monument for the last 6 years. Prior to working with NOAA, David worked with the U.S. Coast Guard and has a JD from UH's William Richardson School of Law. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Carly. It's great to be here.
So, now this is a special year for the monument. Let's talk about that.
Okay. It's our 10th anniversary. 10 years ago, President Bush signed a presidential proclamation which designated the Papahanaumokuakea Marine National Monument the first marine national monument in the country, and at the time it was the largest marine protected area on the planet. It's also the 5th anniversary of the monument's designation as the United States' first mixed natural and cultural World Heritage Site, which was a huge honor and a lot of work on folks throughout the state of Hawaii to bring that recognition to the state.
Well, first off, congratulations. Those
Thank
are
you.
A lot of accomplishments, and I know those are the accomplishments of many
Correct.
Who have been working on this together. So what, over the last 10 years, what are some of the highlights or the big accomplishments that you have achieved in this 10-year anniversary?
Well, in addition to the designation as a World Heritage Site, we were also designated as a particularly sensitive sea area, of which there are only less than 15 in the entire world. That's a International Maritime Organization designation, which helps us keep track of keep track of ship traffic in the monument and helps them avoid certain areas where they're not supposed to go. We've also established a sister site relationship with the Phoenix Island Protected Area in Kiribati, and we've been able to do a lot of collaborative research and exchange activities with them. The monument was one of the first really large-scale marine protected areas on the planet, and along with the Great Barrier Reef, which of course was the first one, kind of started a movement that now encompasses almost 20 large-scale marine protected areas around the world, which is, it's important because fish and birds and other marine life don't know lines on the paper. And in order to protect them, you have to protect a large area around them. And it's all about ecosystem protection, not just a small area. We've also removed over 900 tons of marine debris from the northwestern Hawaiian Islands, all of which came from somewhere else. There's no marine debris generated in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands because everybody that goes up there brings out what they take in. So it all came from somewhere else. And though we are not really able to keep up with the accumulation rate, we're trying very hard. We've been able to translocate two very endangered birds to other islands to increase their chance of survival. The Nihoa millibird and the Laysand duck are now well established on second islands, which will greatly increase their chances of survival. We've been able to restore a huge amount of terrestrial habitat on a number of islands, especially Kure and Midway, removing invasive plants and providing additional habitat for albatross and other nesting animals. We've also done quite a bit of research, some of which has indicated that Hawaii in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands has some of the highest rates of endemism on the entire planet, which means you will find species up there that you find nowhere else. And there are places up there where the endemism rate is 100%, which is much higher than any other place that is currently known on the planet. We've also made a number of exciting maritime heritage discoveries, including the discovery of the Nantucket whaling ship Two Brothers, which is the only known wreck of a Nantucket whaling ship anywhere. Mm. And it's been a pretty exciting and busy and productive 10 years for a very dedicated and collaborative group of people.
So you haven't been sleeping on the job much.
No, not much.
Well, that is a very, very impressive list, which spans a huge amount of detail. How are you going to celebrate this accomplishment? Is there any special events planned?
It's kind of too busy to do a whole lot of celebrating. We're going to mm-hmm. be participating in ICRS, participating in the World Conservation Conference later this month. We try and make note of the celebration. We had a little anniversary party last, I think it was February, at the governor's residence, and that was pretty successful. We got to recognize some folks who were making important contributions to the monument's management and accomplishments over the past 10 years. But we really don't want to spend a whole lot of time celebrating. We got a lot of resources to protect.
Yeah, a lot of work to do. So you talk about the management, and that's a really interesting piece, I think, of this monument. So I want to dive in a little bit deeper there. The structure is very unique of the monument, of how it's protected and who's involved. Can you illustrate a little bit about
that? Sure,
that?
I'd be happy to. The presidential proclamation that established the monument designated the Department of Commerce, the Department of the Interior, and the State of Hawaii as the co-trustees of the monument. That was based on a concept that was established during oil spills of the trustee of the resource and who was actually responsible for protecting it. So the proclamation said, okay, now you three trustees go forth and figure out how you're going to make this work. So the three trustees sat down and came up with a memorandum of agreement that basically set up a management structure that set two divisions of DLNR, the Department of Land and Natural Resources from the state, the Office of Hawaiian Affairs, two parts of the Fish and Wildlife Service, the refuges system, and help me out here, Bill.
Refuges system, and who's the other boy? It's been a long time.
Okay.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife.
Yeah. And two agencies from NOAA, the National Marine Fisheries Service and the Office of National Marine Sanctuaries. So that's seven agencies. They sat down and hammered out a memorandum of understanding, which created the Monument Management Board, which encompassed one representative from each of those seven agencies. Theoretically, we manage by consensus, which means that if we're going to do something, all seven agencies need to agree. We've actually managed to make that work, except in several rare instances. It hasn't always been easy. There have been a lot of heated discussions about some things.
I'm sure.
but when it comes down to it, I think all the agencies realize that it's all about the conservation and protection of the resources, both natural and cultural. And we've been able to establish a joint permitting system, which means that someone who wants to do something in the monument doesn't have to go get a permit from each individual agency, which has been a huge help for anyone who wants to do anything up there, and has actually helped us come together as agencies and share what we really think is important and what our priorities are. Because when it comes down to it, yes, we're seven different agencies with seven different budgets and seven different staffs and seven different management philosophies in some cases, but we all were told we're going to sit down and play nice, and we've managed to do that, I think, pretty well. And I think the Northwestern Hawaiian Islands are better protected for what we've been able to accomplish.
Absolutely. It's definitely a worthy goal there. And you yourself being involved in the monument for almost 6 years now, or maybe even a little bit more at this point, I'm sure you've seen a lot of evolution in terms of how the management board works and how things have been protected. What are some of the most significant changes that you've seen during this time?
Well, I think on the really large scale, it's the realization that you have to protect, or that protecting large-scale marine areas is very important, that piecemealing little protected areas around is not nearly as constructive and productive for protecting the resources. On a much smaller scale, I've seen the agencies spend less time fighting and more time talking and getting things done. It was a hard adjustment. I think this was the first time in the United States that seven agencies had been thrown down together to work together, and we've made it work, but it's been hard. So I think that's been a huge accomplishment. I also think we've been able to create a strong focus on education, and especially going out into the schools and bringing the schools to us to teach them, you know, try to educate them about resource protection and what's important. You know, back in the 60s and 70s, when we wanted to get parents to stop smoking, we told the kids how bad cigarettes are. I think that same logic works really well when you're trying to teach kids to live sustainably and protect the environment.
So with all this protection in this large area, which is fairly remote, not, you know, you can't just hop in your boat and from Honolulu and go out there for a day, What are some of the biggest threats that you're still facing in the monument? So you have this protection, but what are still some of the challenges that you face?
Our three primary threats right now are obviously climate change is a threat to not only us, but to everyone on the planet. We've seen rising sea temperatures. We've seen changes in ocean chemistry. And all these things aren't just, you know, changes in temperature. They impact how the wildlife lives there. What used to be a plant that coexisted with other marine life could suddenly become an invasive species that takes over an entire coral reef. Higher ocean temperatures have caused some coral bleaching up there in recent years. Luckily, not nearly as bad as some other places in the Western Pacific, and actually not as bad as some places here in the main Hawaiian Islands. We've been fairly lucky. One of the other threats is something we talked about earlier, marine debris. We get that 900 tons that we've removed in the last actually two decades has been mostly derelict fishing nets, but there's all kinds of other stuff that accumulates up there. There's bottles, slippers, Clorox things. It's amazing what you can find on the beach up there. It's amazing the number of cigarette lighters you find there. And it's a serious hazard to marine life, not just from ingestion and the direct hazard like that, but it's an entanglement hazard. And as Bob mentioned earlier, it's also a chemical hazard in that these chemicals that go into making plastic will leach out into the animals and into the environment. And there was a study that came out recently that said a lot of the fish that we're eating, you know, we used to just worry about mercury. Now we have to worry about all the stuff that came from the plastics as well.
Yeah.
So one of the third threats we have is alien invasive species. And luckily we've implemented a whole lot of processes here to try and avoid that. When you go on islands up there, you have to wear all new clothes and freeze them before you go on. And we've really tried to keep, you have to get a hull inspection up there before the boats go up there. So we've really tried to keep stuff out, because once a species gets established as alien or invasive, it's really hard to stop.
And by alien and invasive, we mean eat plants or marine animals from other places, not from other worlds.
Not, you, yes. From outside the northwestern Hawaiian island, yes.
Yeah.
Or it actually could be a plant that did exist there, but because of a change in ocean conditions has suddenly changed its behavior.
Sure. Well, I'm glad to hear that the reefs aren't bleaching as badly as some of the other places that we've seen in the last couple of years. What is the plan for the monument in terms of new initiatives and how to better protect the region? I mean, some of the stuff is unavoidable, but are there new initiatives there?
Well, we have gotten together with the other agencies to implement a climate change action plan. That was one of the issues that really wasn't so much a big deal back when the first monument management plan was drafted back in 2006. So we hope to have a plan that will provide a structure for agencies to collaborate and work and bring in more information on climate change. We're also continuing to try and pull out as much marine debris as we can. We have a great initiative with H-Power where all the fishing nets that we bring back from the northwestern Hawaiian Islands are turned over to them and they burn them for electricity. And we're continuing to promote education, sustainability, and just educating people about the northwestern Hawaiian Islands. It still amazes me to talk to people who've lived in Hawaii for decades and still think that the state ends at Niihau. And it's not just kids, it's adults, it's a lot of people that don't know the northwestern Hawaiian Islands exist. And you can't care about something and want to protect it if you don't know about it. So the education is important.
And with the protection and the high rate of endemism, it really is a living laboratory. So much amazing science goes on or as a result of research in the monument. How does that work? Are there science plans, and are there plans for further research this summer?
There are science plans. We do a lot of collaboration with other scientific and research organizations such as the University of Hawaii, Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology, organizations like that. We've also had some private organizations out there doing research, like Schmidt Ocean Institute. They've been out there and have assisted in a lot of the mapping we've been able to accomplish the last couple of years. This summer, there's several cruises, research cruises going on up there. One of them is the Reef Assessment and Monitoring Cruise, which is a cruise that we've been doing since about 2000 that goes up every year and has been a great time series of coral reef conditions up there. Another cruise is going up there to look at the benthic habitat between 100 and 300 feet, which is an area that doesn't get a whole lot of research because it's too deep for scuba divers and too shallow for submersible vessels. So we've learned a lot by doing some research in that area in the last couple of years. And then there's a lot of work going on in the terrestrial area too with the birds and bird relocations and just studying how the benthic habitat and the coastal habitat is changing with the impacts of climate change.
Interesting. Well, I look forward to hearing more about that science. And I know there's also the monument has been making news a lot lately from some of the science that's been going on, but also from a new movement and a request to expand the monument. Who's driving this initiative?
This initiative is coming from outside of the monument. We have nothing to do with the initiative except to provide information and to facilitate the transfer of information back and forth. It was started by some local folks who sent a letter to the president requesting that the monument be expanded from its current 50-mile boundary out to 200 nautical miles. And it's gotten a lot of discussion going in the community. There are people on both sides of the issue. We as the organization itself are not allowed to take a position. Like I said, we're just providing people information. But there is a lot of support for it, and it's, you know, we have talked about the benefits of large scale marine conservation.
Well, that was very neutrally said. Thank you.
I'm trying not to get myself in trouble.
And I don't want you to get in trouble. So my last question for you, David, is, okay, so you guys aren't involved in an opinion for this, but who makes the decision ultimately? Where does that come from, and who says, yes, we'll be able to expand the monument?
That decision would come from the president's administration. Okay. There are currently folks up there looking at the issue, looking at all the sides. There was a group from the Council on Environmental Quality who was down here a couple weeks ago talking to a wide number of constituency groups in the state. And they take that information back to the administration. And at some point, I suppose, the president will decide yes or no.
Okay. Well, if President Obama is listening to the All Things Marine radio show, hopefully he'll get some information from us today. David, thank you so much for your time and sharing about the special place going on and all the research going on in the Papahanaumokuakea Marine National Monument. We're excited to hear more about it this summer. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to talk more about ocean conservation and the Papahanaumokuakea Monument.
You mean I could have diabetes and not even know it?
Then why would I want to know?
Heart disease, amputations, stroke, blindness can all be caused by diabetes. So it's critical that you know. If you're over 45, you don't exercise, and you're overweight, you're at risk. But a simple blood test can detect the problem, and with early treatment, you can prevent the devastating effects of diabetes. Call the American Diabetes Association at 1-800-DIABETES. Don't be blind to diabetes.
Mom?
Dad?
How long should I wait for you?
Mom?
If I'm at soccer practice.
What if something happens? Will you come get me?
There's no reason not to have a plan in case of a terrorist attack.
Mom, if you're not home, should we go to the neighbor's house?
And some extremely good reasons why you should.
Can you tell me?
Everybody should have a plan. Take 5 minutes to talk about where you'll meet and how you'll get in touch with each other in an emergency. For other things you can do to be prepared, visit www.ready.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal. With us now is William Isla Jr., who serves as deputy to the chair of Hawaiian Homes Commission and director of the Department of Hawaiian Homes Lands. Williams served as the former chair of the Board of Land and Natural Resources and head of Department of Land and Natural Resources. It is an honor to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you. Carly, it's an honor to be here. I've known you for quite a while, and I'm amazed that you've come this far and are doing these kinds of interesting things.
Well, it's so nice to have you, and it's so nice to be able to talk about the monument with you. And we're going to go a little away from that neutral opinion and talk a little bit more about some of the controversy around expanding the monument. So first, tell me a little bit more about how this initiative got started.
Okay. Before I do that, Carl, if you just indulge me, the two guests that we have in the audience, I just want to acknowledge him. And
absolutely.
You know, so Bob's legacy, I think, is as a scientist is pretty solid, but I think his real legacy is going to be known for the blending of indigenous and Western science and bringing both parties together. Really, for the last 10 years, it's been amazing, and I think both sides have benefited immensely from that. And then the young cadre of students that he has mentored and are coming up, I'm incredibly impressed with them. And David, just incredibly impressed with his support of the monument and the management. And when he talks about bringing seven agencies together, it is, picture a family with seven brothers and sisters that can't get along, but are told to get along. And then finally, over a period of time, understand that in order to move the family forward, they have to get along. And the results in the last 10 years and the success of Papahanaumokuakea is truly amazing, not just to Hawaii, but to the world. A classic example is you have Malama Honua. You know, Nainoa is in New York right now presenting to the Secretary General the commitments of all the places that Hokulea stopped. And that closely ties to how did this expansion idea start? Well, I was in Chile with Pew for an ocean conference that highlighted the Secretary of State, John Kerry. And in my mind, I was reminiscing about some of the leaders of the original Coral Reef Ecosystem Reserve and Papahanaumokuakea. So people like Uncle Buzzy Agard, Uncle Walter Paulo, Uncle Erika Anana, Kavika Kapalehua, and Auntie Isabella Abbott. And these folks, were thinking about them. And, you know, at the time that the Coral Reef Reserve was created and Papa was created, they kept saying, is this really big enough? Shouldn't we be discussing a larger size? And so it is with that thought that I met Seth Horsemeyer from Pew, and we were discussing, gee, wouldn't it be great if President Obama were to come to the World Conservation Congress and announce an expansion of Papahanaumokuakea? And we both agreed. And later in the day in that meeting, he said, oh, there is Christy Goldfuss, who's the director of CEQ. She's waiting at the elevator for her car to come and pick her up. Let me introduce you. And so at the elevator, I had about 2 minutes with her. I said, hi, my name is William Aila. I'm from Hawaii. And do you think the president would be interested in the expansion of Papahanaumokuakea and announcing it at the World Conservation Congress? And her answer was, after a moment of silence and thinking about it, was, I'm not sure. Write us a letter and we'll see. And that began this process of coming home and getting other prominent Hawaiians to sign the letter to the president saying, would you be interested in the expansion of Papahanaumokuakea? And would you be interested in coming to World Conservation Congress on September 1st and making this announcement? That was followed up by a meeting of other Native Hawaiians to Washington, D.C., follow-up meetings with Christy. And the result was, I think, CEQ was interested. I believe the president is very much interested. And so the ball is rolling. I mean, the monument staff, National Marine Fisheries staff, Department of Interior staff have been asked for their thoughts. They've been asked for possible scenarios. So we do know that the president is very much interested and he's considering all of the options right now. But there are others that, you know, in the original Coral Reef Ecosystem Reserve in Papa that also need some recognition. So this is Isaac and Tammy Harp. They're still with us today, moving for expansion. Vicky Holt Takamine, very supportive, one of the signers of the letters. Uncle Buzzy is always, you know, fresh in our minds. Linda Paul, one of the originals. Stephanie Freed, I remember the challenges that we had and the discussions that occurred. Dave Rainey, Aulani Wilhelm. I mean, she matured so much through this process and is leading, you know, large discussions on other marine protected areas. So Nainoa is delivering to the UN General right now a list of commitments that people from around the world have made. So our ask to President Obama is to be bold and at the World Conservation Congress present the boldest commitment that Hawaii and the United States can make to the world in the expansion of Papahānaumokuakea. The first designation by President Bush really set off a reaction around the world. This ripple went around the world, and other countries began to look at their waters and their management. We believe that once the president, you know, expands Papa, a similar but larger ripple will go around the world, and will have an equal or better reaction, which will result in better protections for the world's oceans, which will result in better protections for the world people, just as Nainoa is so very fond of saying, yeah, healthy planet, healthy people.
It's an amazing idea, and I really hope that that can go through. Can you tell me a little bit about the details of the expansion? So what are we talking about? Are we expanding a couple miles? Are we expanding? How big are we expanding? Mm-hmm. And what's the impetus behind that
expansion? So a little bit more than a couple of miles. We're taking the 50 miles from each emergent land over there and taking out to the extent of the United States Exclusive Economic Zone, mm-hmm. the EEZ. And there are many people that are questioning that decision. However, we believe that the science is certainly there for protecting migratory paths, for protecting feeding areas, for protecting breeding areas of a number of different species, as well as protecting the ocean bottom, which we know very little about, but have had some amazing discoveries just in the last 4 or 5 years, and in the last year, for example. Finding the largest sponge known to man right now, the size of a minivan. Discovering the oldest living animal on the planet, which started growing prior to the building of the pyramids, a black coral. Discovering species that man has never seen before, with a potential cure for cancer and all kinds of potential human ailments and opportunities for us to understand these very complex, very remote ecosystems. Yesterday's newspaper with Mr. Kosaki, finding 100% endemism at Kure. These are discoveries that we've never known before. It's very important to protect this area because it has drawn the interest of international mining companies. So it's not just about protecting the area from fisheries. It's about protecting the area from mining, protecting the area as a insurance policy, if you will, on climate change. It's paying attention to the Battle of Midway and the artifacts of that battle, along with, you know, the human casualties that occurred that are still there. So the expansion of Papa out to the EEZ would provide protections, you know, for the three Japanese aircraft carriers, the one U.S. aircraft carrier, there's more than 300 aircraft that have been known to be shot down in that area. So it's a very complex and comprehensive ask of the president, but well worth the effort.
Well, and it seems that every time that the science happens up there, when there's research going on, there's more discoveries every time, and we realize the significance of this of this place. And as the technology develops, we're not only looking at these shallow reef areas, but some of these deeper regions, now that we have the technology to access those areas and see the importance of those deep corals and sponges. And
it's amazing you talk about technology, but technology is also historic technology. So
absolutely.
when Nainoa and the other navigators sail to Mokumanamana or sail to Nihoa, and young anthropologists like Kekueva get to spend time in the area, it's a a renaissance of the Hawaiian activity that occurred there for more than 600 years. It's a recognition that we're really talking about a seascape and not talking about individual islands or individual atolls or individual seamounts. It's a seascape, and that seascape, once we begin to delve more into the Hawaiian cultural seascape, that seascape will expand to Tahiti, it will expand to Rapa Nui, it'll expand to Aotearoa, because the ocean doesn't separate. The ocean actually connects us all. And as we find or determine or recognize more natural signs or natural observations of navigation, like the watercolor change over shallow shoals, or the ability to recognize an atoll based upon the reflection of the lagoon's waters under the clouds, it'll become more apparent to us, these connections. And that's what Papa also represents. In addition to all the science, the incredible cultural discoveries that are coming out of that area.
I couldn't agree more. And how is the community responding to this expansion? Do you have a lot of support from the Hawaiian community?
We have amazing support, not only from the Hawaiian community, but from the overall community in Hawaii. We also, it's amazing because as we listen to or are presented with the opposition, it is very interesting that, at least I've spoken with a lot of people that, like myself, would go out on a small boat and maybe part-time commercial fish. One thing that's amazing is that group of fishermen can't understand why the opponents to the expansion are so supportive of the longline industry. It's because we're natural competitors. And the longline industry actually competes with us for the yellowfin tuna. And all of the folks that I've spoken to, and I've spoken to more than 100 people from Maui to Kauai, they all are puzzled by why this big effort to protect the minimal amount of longline fishing that is occurring in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands, when the fishery is really governed by a quota system. And they're well on their way to fill their quota. They'll likely fill it before the middle of August. And, you know, it's really amazing that they go and purchase quota from other Pacific countries, but still fish in the Central Pacific. And I like this. I liken this to, and, you know, children can understand it very easily. You know, we have a forest in Hawaii, and there's 100 trees in there, and you're allowed to take 5 trees per year. Why would a management system allow somebody to purchase trees from someplace else, but not take the trees out there and continue to take the trees in your forest? That is not sustainable management. And that's what people come up to me and share with me. So there are many, many reasons to do it, and there are so few reasons not to do it.
Have you received support from our local government here in Hawaii for the expansion?
We have certainly, we have support in the legislature. Unfortunately, there are many legislators who did not have the benefit of our information when they signed the letter to the president. I also have to point out that there is, you know, in Hawaii, it's not often what you do, but it's how you do it. Mm-hmm. And so that letter was presented with 3 resolutions that were never heard in this legislative session. And I suppose it was sent that way to give the appearance that the legislature took this action. Once our congressional delegation was made aware of this fact, and the president's office through CEQ was made aware of this fact, they began to question, and rightfully so, I think, the credibility of the opponents to the expansion.
Now, I know there's an petition going on for the monument expansion. Can you tell us how successful you've been with that so far, and where people can go if they want to sign the petition?
Oh, God. It's... we're over 50,000, getting closer to 60,000 right now, and those are one of the things I should have written down. But I think you could Google "expand Papahana Mokuakea," get to the website, and you'd be able to sign on to the petition, as well as all the supporting documents that are carefully included with citations, with scientific citations, so that, you know, someone who's objective could view the science that's behind it and come to an appropriate objective conclusion.
Excellent. Well, I am sad to say we are running out of time here, but I would love to talk more about this with you. And so hopefully we can have you back on the show with some exciting news in the fall, perhaps.
We hope to watch the president come and make that announcement.
You hear that? President Obama, go big or go home.
There you go. Be bold.
I want to give a warm welcome to all of my guests today who are working so hard to protect Hawaii's coral reefs in so many ways. Remember to check out the public events for the International Coral Reef Symposium and to voice your support for the Papahana Mokuakea Marine Monument expansion. I'd like to give a shout out to our sponsor, the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology. I'm Carly Weiner. Now get out there and enjoy our ocean planet.